Welcome to Altitudes, a podcast from Etihad about how the world is defined by travel and the people that are defining travel's future. I'm your host, James Sanderson. The beginning of 2020 was a promising one for Etihad. The first quarter of the year saw record passenger numbers as the airline flew over 3.4 million passengers all around the world. Fast forward to Q2, and that number had dropped by an unprecedented 99%, reaching just above 30,000 passengers. Such a massive drop in passenger numbers in such a short space of time was unheard of in the history of aviation, but Etihad wasn't alone. Every airline in the world saw aircraft grounded, flights cancelled, and passenger numbers dwindle as a result of COVID-19. So, how does an international airline survive when the world stops traveling? When will the world open back up again? And just how different will traveling be post-pandemic? Joining us to help answer these questions is Tony Douglas, Group Chief Executive Officer of Etihad Aviation Group. Formerly the CEO of Heathrow Airport and having served in the UK Ministry of Defence, Tony is no stranger to tough situations. We'll ask him how he navigated this situation, what lessons he's learned, and what he believes the future holds, not just for Etihad, but for the travel industry as a whole. Tony, thanks very much for joining us today on the very first episode of Altitudes.
Hello, everybody, and I hope you're staying very safe and well.
A simple question to start off with. Do you remember when you first heard the term COVID-19?
It's a great question because it was coronavirus. I think COVID-19 was the kind of rebrand as the media globally took a hold of it with real energy. My recollection takes me back probably to the back end of January and things that were going on at that time in Wuhan and China in particular. I was looking for a handrail to try and get some sense as to what this might lead to. Like many, the reference points in my mind was SARS and MERS. Whatever I was thinking at that stage, it has been a massive multiple bigger in every dimension, but that's the nature of challenges like this.
There probably isn't a single person who hasn't been affected by this pandemic. So before we get into the business side of things, how have you and your family been holding up through all of this? Did any of them get caught up in the lockdowns or border closures internationally?
Well, the whole Douglas household is in the Douglas household in Abu Dhabi. Alhamdulillah, thanks to God that was the case, because certainly on a personal level for me, it would have been an awful lot more difficult had that not have been the case. I think, as you rightly said, everybody has been affected by this in one way or another. And I think it's important, therefore, like everything else in life, to put things into perspective. Health and family are, you know, the big foundation stones. And I honestly believe that all other problems, be them big or small, can be resolved.
COVID-19 has been a big problem for the travel industry, so much so that the UAE government eventually suspended all commercial flights in and out of the country, effectively grounding Etihad's entire fleet. How did all of this transpire?
Well, you know, the fateful day for us was the 23rd of March, and it was absolutely heartbreaking for me and the Etihad family. But there was a lead into that, of course. It was clear for the weeks preceding that that was a position that we had to adopt, and quite rightly so. You know, we had time, therefore, to carefully consider how we would go about suspending normal commercial flying with the minimum disruption. And bearing in mind, you know, our first responsibility is the safety, wellness and service that we offer to Etihad's guests. And we wanted to make sure that the understandable confusion, anxiety and frankly anger of many people who were so impacted by this.
But grounding an entire fleet like this is almost unheard of, with the exception, of course, of geopolitical events or natural disasters. What was going through your mind when the decision became official?
The immediate thing that was going through my mind is how you turn a massive negative into an opportunity, and to try and think like all good chess players, six or seven moves ahead. So before we grounded the fleet, we established four specific projects. The first one was Project Restart. It's a lot more difficult restarting an airline than parking one down. And we put a huge amount of effort into a very structured program to be able to put our aircraft back in the sky. The second project was Project Cabin. An opportunity to have access to the whole fleet meant that we could undertake what has been the biggest and costliest maintenance exercise in the history of Etihad. We went about the interiors of our cabins in a way which was almost obsessive when it comes to detail. The analogy I would use is the classic car that goes through the detailers to buff it and polish it and present it with absolute concourse conditions being required. The third project was around cargo, and that's proven to be important for all manner of very obvious reasons, but there was humanitarian aid requirements to put aircraft almost immediately after March the 23rd back into service to be able to support. So we created a mini network that was using our very efficient 787 Dreamliners for cargo. And the final project, and this is probably the important one to your question, was Project Vision. So we tried to envision what would the travelling public want more of as a fundamental requirement post-COVID. Etihad Wellness has taken us on a journey where we redesigned our product such that it is contactless from a physical point of view. The cleanliness and almost surgical standards of hygiene that are presented are assured, all the way through that we've retrained all of our amazing cabin crew such that we've now got dedicated wellness ambassadors on board. And those wellness ambassadors are there not only to give the guest absolute assurance in terms of how we can make the flight a safe flight in every aspect, but also to be there as the person who can respond to questions and, wherever necessary, give aid to the people who are flying with us.
You mentioned Etihad Wellness before. Do you see this focus on wellness as an essential part of the travel experience now?
People need a greater sense of assurance that when they choose to travel again, they can do so in a safe fashion. And it was off the back of that that we went almost back to the drawing board to say, what do we anticipate the future will have in store? It's had absolute rave reviews from everybody who's experienced it. And you won't be surprised to hear me call it out there. If you're looking to travel anytime soon, go on to etihad.com. I think you'll be taken by how we've differentiated our product to give you that level of personal comfort and assurance. I think there's a natural anxiety when it comes to going back to flying, and therefore being able to do so in this way, I think, is not only essential to give the travelling public that sense of confidence, but also as a primary differentiator. I speak very personally. I probably wouldn't want to be crammed into one of the typical European low-cost operators at the moment. Obviously, cost is always a primary differentiator, but as I'm returning back to flying, I think I want more space. I want the ability to see the hygiene standards at the absolute top of the game, but also see a product that is seamless from end to end.
You've also been a vocal proponent in calling for the introduction of health visas to help ease the current restrictions placed on international travel. Tell us about your thinking on this.
Well, I think both myself and a number of other senior airline executives are of a similar opinion. And I guess in some ways, the parallel I would draw is back to some of the many security challenges that we've seen over previous decades. You could go all the way back to Lockerbie, 9/11, the liquid bomb threat from Heathrow to North America. And as a consequence, there were changes that were adopted over time internationally to be able to put things like whole baggage screening into play, separation of arrivals and departures, and of course, restrictions on fluids and such like. That was a response to a threat that could only be mitigated by agreeing a common set of standards that could give assurance to the travelling public that they were safe. COVID in many cases isn't fundamentally different. Given the way the testing technologies have rapidly developed, the response time is ever decreasing, and the cost per test, of course, is continuing to reduce. So I see that there is a very rational approach to saying, if you have been tested, as everybody is who can board an aircraft, the assurance that nobody else on that aircraft has tested positive, I think is a key way in which people will come back to the normality of air travel. So I don't see any real difference between what visas were designed to do. In the same way now, I would envisage your wellness certification to act as a health visa would be a way in which the world can get back to travelling in a controlled and assured fashion.
When I first met you, you said that in your career, you've been somewhat of a chameleon and have had to adapt to new roles and situations. You've definitely had a very colourful career. You've been in aerospace, airports, airlines, and your time with the UK Ministry of Defence. What lessons would you say that you've learned during these previous roles that has served you well in this moment?
Human nature tries to establish certainty at times when quite often certainty doesn't exist. Trying to presume that we can actually see into the future and create perhaps a false handrail to guide ourselves along. In situations like this, the reality is there's no certainty or there's very little certainty. And consequently, I think without sounding, philosophical about this, you have to be comfortable with ambiguity. Embracing ambiguity can become not only something to get you over the anxiety, but then allowing yourself to say, well, look, there's no right or wrong answer. What you've got to do is stay focused, maintain momentum, and it's all about little victories. And, what I think we've done successfully is continue to make lots of little victories that have not only sustained our motivation within the Etihad family, but the remarkable progress that has been made in the most difficult of times.
So what do you predict will be the long-term changes that will come to the workplace because of all of this?
Back to the ambiguity. My crystal ball is no better calibrated than anybody else's, but I would speculate even when COVID is over, more people and more employers will feel more comfortable with people working from home. I don't believe it'll have quite the profound shift that some spectators suggest, but nonetheless, I think a world where flexible working requirements will be ever more popular, using some of the tools that most organisations had before COVID but simply weren't using, like Microsoft Teams and Zoom and so on and so forth. It's now almost in our muscle memory. It's second nature, and we know how to make these tools work really well. There's also a very commercial conclusion to draw from this. Why would you have very expensive real estate that you have to pay premium for when perhaps we could actually downsize our real estate footprint and allow people the flexibility at the same time to work from home as part of that combination? So I think there'll be sizable changes in that regard.
And what about business travel? Obviously, that's very relevant to an airline's core business. What changes do you see coming there?
Globally, the idea of flying for a three-hour meeting, let's say to New York, but it takes 3 days from door to door, given that those meetings at the moment are being carried out on Teams or Zoom, is going to have some impact on business travel. Having said that, I've observed in previous global security-related crises that whilst that does have an impact for a period of time, there's nothing better than doing the deal in a very interpersonal way, where there's a social aspect to it. You can spend time eye to eye. But I don't deny the fact that the world has been forced to embrace some of these tools like Teams and Zoom all at the same time is almost certainly going to have some impact on the way in which business travel used to operate.
I remember on the morning of the 23rd of March, we came into this office and you said that the way we communicated over the coming weeks is what we would truly be judged on. Looking back over this time, would you say that Etihad fulfilled that commitment to its guests? Where do you feel the airline excelled and where did it fall short?
So I remember that moment as if it was yesterday. Of course, the sentiment behind that is as relevant now and will be, frankly, forever. Brands are determined by their values and their behaviour. And I just wanted to remind our organisation that that would always be the Etihad way and our default. Having said that, I guess, your question around what do I think we've done, where we've excelled, and maybe with Professor Hindsight's hat on, What might we have done more of? I think where we've excelled is trying our level best to communicate as actively as we possibly can. We've done major upgrades on Etihad.com. We've done major upgrades on the Etihad app. We've done major upgrades on the Etihad guest program. We've done all of that given the incredible pace at which travel restrictions and rules have been changing. And I guess that's almost the bridge to the things with Professor Hindsight's hat on. Whilst it'd be easy for me to say, because it's true, that we as a business haven't had control over policy setting nationally and internationally when it comes to quarantine rules, travel restrictions, which countries get closed, which countries get opened up again. Back in April and May, the rules could have been changing 5 or 6 times just in a week alone. And as a consequence, I always felt like we were letting the guests down because you have bought a ticket, you had a travel plan, and the question you wanted to ask was, am I able to do so? And what restrictions will I be subjected to? At times, to be quite honest, we weren't able to articulate that as crisply as we would like because the goalposts were continually moving. Now, I think the good news is there's a lot of that now that is starting to slowly normalise. And I think as ever, you know, what we'll do is our very, very level best to engage and communicate with our guests. And we're going to put all of our energy in making sure that that's absolutely up to date.
How long do you think it will be before international travel is back to normal, so to speak?
It's been interesting since COVID started. There was a lot of people suggesting that the world and aviation would get back to 2019 passenger numbers by 2022. That very quickly moved out to 2023, and IATA and others have come out with yet another reforecast that pushes that way further out again. You know, clearly we don't know precisely where it'll land, but the one thing I think that is quite clear is it's going to be in that kind of zone. It won't be 2021, it won't be 2022. You know, the wellness visa kind of logic we discussed earlier, I think realistically you can see something coming in place in order to be able to assure travel. And, you know, it's a perhaps strange parallel to draw, but I'm a country boy. I was brought up with animals. Racehorses, when they're moving around Europe for decades, have always had a wellness certification linked to what has to be administered by the vet, which then gets barcoded against the passport, which then gets scanned at the border control. And whilst that might, in one sense, sound like a ludicrous example to draw to, it's easy, it's efficient, and it guarantees the integrity of smooth passage. I think something that links either a vaccine administration or a testing administration to the travel document is probably going to be the safest way to get people back to travel and sustaining that.
Do you think the travel industry as a whole has risen to the challenge of COVID-19? And more importantly, do you think it has the strength and stamina to keep up the fight if indeed a full recovery is 3 to 4 years away?
I think quite bluntly, that's a yes. And yes answer. I think, you know, mankind, thousands of years of history that shows that it's able to adapt, resolve and move on. There's a solution to every problem. There will be solutions to this one. It will take time and it might be complicated before it gets more straightforward, but I think it will adapt. I observe some of the amazing things that Boeing and Airbus, Rolls-Royce and GE is going through because, of course, they've been affected as much as any of us. And, of course, the travel industry at large, not just the travel agents and the, you know, the ticketing houses, but also the hotel and leisure market. There is a kind of spectrum of impact across all of them and many others. So we're all in it together. We'll all come out of it together if we stay together, if that kind of makes sense. And I think the point there is, we'll probably all have to make concessions with a long-term game in mind. I think any organisation now that becomes short-sighted may well become a victim of that short-sightedness.
We We've touched on Etihad's fleet being grounded already, and since operations have resumed, there's one aircraft that is missing, and that's the Airbus A380. The Etihad A380 holds a very special place in many travellers' hearts. Looking back to 2014, when Etihad first introduced it, it was hailed as revolutionary, setting new benchmarks in cabin design and customer experience. So, the question is, and I'm sure many travellers will want to know, will we ever see the Etihad A380 fly again?
So, everybody loves the A380. It's resounding, you know, the product that it presents and the grace in which it does so. It was, for such a long time, the pinnacle, the industry leader. As you pointed out earlier on, sadly, my career's gone for far too long. And I recall 30 years ago, I was the manufacturing director of the Avro 146RJ, which was a 100-seat, four-engined regional jet. And I guess, sadly, all the way back 30 years ago, I learnt one simple economic fact. Anything with more than two engines is sadly not going to be able to sustain itself going forward, particularly if your brand is as serious about sustainability as Etihad is. The 787 Dreamliner is massively, massively more efficient per seat kilometre than the A380, and everybody knows that. So we're heartbroken to see R380s parked up. The question as to whether they'll ever fly again, to be equally direct about it, I'd say the jury's out. I think it's heavily handicapped by two engines too many and other aircraft that can do the job far more efficiently, far more sustainably. So I'm not trying to rule out the 380. It would break my heart even more to do so at this stage. But in the same way that, you know, 747s have finally been retired pretty much everywhere, I think we're probably going to see now an acceleration of the same with the global A380 fleet.
Since you joined Etihad, how many times have you been asked if the airline is merging with Emirates? And will it drive you crazy if we ask you again?
So I'd almost say if I had a dollar for every time I've been asked that question, I guess if Tim Clark was given a dollar for every time he's been asked the same question, between the two of us, we'd be able to resolve the balance sheet challenges that airlines have got everywhere at the moment. The simple reality is it's a predictable and obvious piece of speculation. So, you know, there's no flippant way of just closing it down by saying, what a ludicrous question. Having said that, because it's such an obvious question, the reality is as simple as it would only ever be facilitated by the two shareholders. And I, and to the best of my knowledge, Tim, knows not of any dialogue whatsoever. So consequently, it's nothing other than an obvious question that people will probably continue to ask me. And that's it.
We're covering all the hot topics today, so we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about this one. There's probably one major event in 2020 that will be remembered in the UAE as much as COVID-19, and that is the normalization of diplomatic relations with Israel. This announcement was momentous and definitely took the world by surprise. Part of this process, as it's been reported, is the establishment of direct air links between the two countries. So I'll ask you the question that everybody is asking right now. Is Etihad about to launch services between Abu Dhabi and Israel?
First of all, as you've already said, it probably caught all of us with a surprise. It's probably one of those landmark historical moments that over the fullness of time will probably become even more apparent to how significant it is. And I think it's a demonstration of the incredible leadership here in the United Arab Emirates and Abu Dhabi. We've already been in dialogue. And I see that there's nothing other than great opportunity to explore the means by which we can give a direct air corridor from Tel Aviv to Abu Dhabi. So I'll keep you posted.
You've no doubt heard many stories from pilots, cabin crew, and other staff members during this time. Have any touched you emotionally? And are there any that stand out in particular in your mind?
Could probably keep this interview going for the next 2 days in answering that one question, because organisations have heroes all around us who do things for the right reasons and more often than not way over and above the call of the normal day job type of thing. We've got thousands of them, to be quite honest, and I mean thousands of them. when we put flights into Wuhan on a humanitarian mission, it was all volunteers. You know, it wasn't orders, it was volunteers. When the UAE sought for volunteers to support the medical profession, the call centres, distributing food to people in real need, we ended up with thousands of volunteers. You know, we've all had big salary sacrifices. We've all been in lockdown ourselves, but that hasn't deterred hundreds and hundreds of members of the Etihad family looking after other people and supporting the community and supporting our business. Some of them literally are tear-jerking. And for that reason, I'm not going to invoke them now, so I won't get terribly specific other than to say organisations are defined by their culture. The culture is defined by people. And we've just got such an amazing family that in a situation like this has just shown what they really care for.
Is there anything that you've read lately that has helped you throughout all of this?
I've not really had a lot of time for reading, all told. The only one that springs to mind, because I actually have read it again this year, and it's a personal favourite of mine. It's called Endurance, and it's the story of Ernest Shackleton going to the South Pole. Endurance is the name of the ship that they went in, which then got trapped in the ice, and as a consequence, they spent almost a year getting back. Absolutely amazing story of human endeavour to survive, and also the mental will, because it was written from Shackleton's diaries, and there was times in his diary he was admitting that the situation was not just perilous, it was impossible. And he never ever revealed that to anybody other than the diary, because to have done so, in his opinion, would have then given people a situation where they could have given up hope. And of course, in this particular case, I think it was that hope, that focus, that perspective that rescued them. It's a delightful read.
Well, I can definitely see a lot of parallels between that situation and this one.
Yeah.
So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself if you could travel back to 2019?
For me, it'd be a really simple one, and I say it half tongue in cheek, and that would be, I wish I and the Douglas family had travelled a lot more personally in 2019, because I'm really missing it in 2020. So the sooner we get back to the normality and the joy from flying, you don't realise how much you miss something until it's taken away. If I could have done anything differently last year, I would have made sure I'd have got at least 3 or 4 more destinations in.
So, Tony, where do we go now?
I think where we go now is, as we said before, we stay focused, we respond to the ever-changing nature of this challenge. And as, you know, countries open up, as the market starts to come back, step by step, we present Etihad with its wellness proposition to be the airline of choice. And quite frankly, there is no blueprint on the shelf. There's no book on this one. There's no map. It's all uncharted. And I think, you know, get over that and embrace it. And if we can embrace it, I think it might actually be more of a joy than it is sometimes when it feels like just solid pain. We'll come out of this stronger.
Tony Douglas, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.